It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. Devendra Hardawar from Engadget, Micah Sargent from Mobile Nations, Ben Brock Johnson from WBUR, and man, is there a lot to talk about. Two very important Supreme Court decisions that could change everything. A guy named Vermin Supreme, who's running for president, offering you a pony. I'm not sure why that got in the show, but it did. And why you shouldn't really worry about that iPhone brute force attack. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 672, recorded Sunday, June 24th, 2018. Meme the Queen. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Betterment, the largest independent online financial advisor. Sign up today at Betterment.com/TWiT. And get up to 1 year managed free. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second generation Eero is tri-band and twice as fast. For free overnight shipping in the U.S. or Canada, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code TWIT. And by Quip. The first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit getquip.com/twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with distinguished technology journalists like the beautiful Micah Sargent from iMore. He's a senior editor at Mobile Nations. And he's a good-looking fella. Hey, Micah.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you, Leo. I'm excited to be here, of course, ready to kick things off.
Don't get too excited. You're only attractive because you're young.
Oh, great.
That's the truth. I'm sorry. I've learned it all fades with age. No, it's great to have
I'll have to stay young forever.
You're an attractive person in many ways, not just your looks. Also, we have a surprisingly good-looking bunch today. Devendra Hardawar is also here. He's senior editor at Engadget. And I love that shirt, Devendra.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I love it. It's great for video. I try to wear it as often as possible.
You're in New York? Where are you? I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
Is it hot in Brooklyn today?
It is. It's all right. I just came from Georgia, actually. Just flew back in yesterday, and that is hot. That is like 90 to 95 every day. It's pretty cool here right now.
That might explain why there's about 15 people here from Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole
Nobody
group
wants
from
to be
Georgia.
In Georgia in the summer. Yeah.
The Good News TV Network, GNTV, they're all here. There's many of them are interns, but they're people who do broadcast. They help various church organizations do broadcasts, and they're here to figure out how the hell we do it. Right? No, you know better. And there's also a guy who runs the network for the Metro North Railway. So if the trains are on time, you could thank Sergey. Also with us, Ben Brock Johnson, senior producer
Hello.
WBUR. Hey, Ben.
How are you?
I'm great. They stuck you in the attic, it looks like, today.
That's where I like to be. I keep it cool in the attic.
Oh, but wait a minute.
Devendra, it's nice to meet you.
Oh, you haven't met?
We've talked before, but I've never seen you in person. So it's nice to meet you.
It's weird because Micah, we're virtually meeting, even though we're in the same city. So very strange.
That's right.
Nice to meet both of you.
Yes.
Micah, Ben, Devendra,
hello.
Micah. So
Micah, it gets worse.
They all have, they all have podcasts and all, you know, they do. But see, this is the one advantage. We're one of the few podcast networks that does video for reasons no one really gets because most of our people listen on the internet. But this is the advantage. So you can see each other like this is our first time seeing each other. Yeah. A couple of big Supreme Court decisions this week. We were, before the show, Carsten, my producer, and I were debating which is the bigger of the two. I think they're both important. Mobile phone privacy rights were bolstered by a 5-4 decision. Chief Justice Roberts was the swing on this one, saying that law enforcement needs a warrant to get your location records. All this time, all of the major telcos in the United States, the wireless carriers, have had special website portals for law enforcement that that any law enforcement, local police, the dog catcher can go to, and for like $1.50, it wasn't expensive, could say, where was Devendra on the night of May 22nd, 2012? And they'll have it. The case was kind of an interesting one. A fella named Timothy Ivory Carpenter was accused of robbing a series of Radio Shacks. That in and itself is interesting, but it was he probably could have just waited till they went bankrupt. But anyway, he was armed robbery he was accused of, and the only evidence they had was law enforcement got 127 days of his cell phone records and was able to match up his location with the time of the robberies. He was near those locations each and every time, and that got him a conviction. His conviction has not been overturned, but it's been sent back to the lower court. And Justice Roberts was kind of at pains to call the ruling a narrow one, saying, quote, it focused on the unique nature of cell phone location information. And in particular, they were bugged at the length of time. Mapping a cell phone's location, he wrote, this is in his decision, over the course of 127 days provides an all-encompassing record of the holder's whereabouts. So I think that's the key, that it's not like, well, was he there during that event? Was he there during that event? But it's everywhere he was. Roberts wrote, as with GPS information, the timestamp data provides an intimate window into a person's life, revealing not only his particular movements, but through them his familial, political, professional, religious, and sexual associations. Wow. Kennedy, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch dissented. But so it was a narrow victory, a 5-4 victory, kind of, the Chief Justice was the swing in this one. Good news?
I think it's mixed news.
Mixed news. That's interesting.
I think it's mixed news. Yeah, yeah. I do this Vox piece. There's some stuff to agree with there. We've all seen or maybe have seen those law shows where, it suddenly cuts to this dramatic scene and the person's like, oh, yeah, Judge blah, blah, blah owes me a favor so I can go get that warrant right quick. And I think that, it's noted that it doesn't have to just be federal judges who can get these, who can issue these warrants. It goes all the way down the line. And
all the way down, Aziz Hook writing in Vox says, all the way down the line to a clerk who could write this warrant. It's called judicial shopping, and it's looking for somebody, anybody, a municipal court clerk with no law training can actually write a warrant. So he says it's an issue because of the weakening of the Fourth Amendment, basically.
Yeah, we may assume that this is a huge, huge protection, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be impossible now, except in the very specific cases where this is needed. So it might make it a little bit harder, sure, but we still shouldn't go, okay, now we're protected in this way and we don't have to worry about police getting this in maybe cases where it's not necessary, because as we see, like, there are opportunities for them to still get these warrants.
But Ben, was it Ben who thought it was great news?
I thought it was better, but yeah.
Yeah, Devendra thought it was great news.
Yeah.
I mean, where I'd be really interested to see if this extends farther into the realm of cell phones, because the same doctrine that you're getting too much information applies to any time you search a cell phone. You're getting somebody's entire life is stored in this little device.
Yeah, I think that's really the key, right? That it's an awareness that the cell phone, they're not just tracking location, it's everything tied to that location data and what it means. And what I found fascinating about this is just like that greater awareness. So yeah, it's not a complete fix, but hopefully it'll lead to, other decisions that, have a wider understanding of what technology, actually can do today.
Roberts also said, by the way, that it really only affects long-term gathering of data, at least a week or more. And he said, now that's, it wasn't in the decision, but he said that it wasn't ruling on efforts to collect information for shorter spans. So it's possible, I suppose, to interpret it that, well, if you only want where was Devendra last night, that's okay. You don't need a warrant for that. But if you want to know where was Devendra all last month, I don't know why I'm picking on you, Devendra. But
I was gone all last week. Dude. Nobody knows. I was offline, not paying attention to news.
Technology, he seems shifty.
Technology companies, including Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Verizon, Twitter, and Google all filed amicus briefs urging the court to protect the data.
I think it's good. I think this is good news, Leo, in that, like Micah said, it's a small hurdle, right? But it is incremental, and it also establishes a record in a way that it might not have established a record before, without this kind of needing to get a warrant, right? And I don't think it solves any of the big issues of data privacy and user understanding of like what information they're putting out into the world and on their devices. But I do think that it's helpful to at least force law enforcement to at least, go through some of the basic steps of getting permission to collect this data. I think in that regard, it's a good thing.
Any step we take towards better cell phone privacy, I think, is going to be important. It's interesting that Verizon filed an amicus brief on this, because Verizon famously was the one that used the super cookie, that if you were a Verizon customer, they would sell the information of that super cookie to the highest bidder. So if somebody wanted to track you, basically they could use that to track you. Verizon did stop that practice after the FCC went after them, but they're not known for privacy advocacy.
No. Mm-hmm. I think it's more like a visible thing, right? You show that you care about privacy in a certain way. And I should say, technically, I work for Verizon too, so it's all very confusing. I would like it as a company to be better about these things for sure.
Well, I think that's the other thing, is that we're starting to be a little more sophisticated in our understanding of companies, that they're not exactly monolithic.
Right.
There are people at Verizon who support data privacy, and then there are other people selling your information to the highest bidder. And one company
can have both whole departments.
Yeah, Verizon was one of the cell companies, I'm sure, who had this portal for law enforcement to find out where anybody was.
Speaking of that portal, Leo, I mean, I have to be honest with you. I think one of the good things about these rulings is that it puts this stuff out into the public a little bit more, so that people can learn about this kind of thing. Because the thing that I'm being honest about is I didn't know that there was a portal that you could pay a little bit of money and then get someone's cell location data. That's horrifying. And if we know that that was a possibility in the past, like, at least people know that and know that what this warrant does is changes that. And, maybe we aren't in complete control, but it starts with having this knowledge in the first place. And so when the Supreme Court gets involved, usually it's going to work its way out a little bit more to the public, and they will be more aware of these things. And that's good.
Yeah. And back in May, you might remember the story about Secure Us, which was a company that major business was prison phones. They made a lot of money charging prisoners for phone calls, but they were collecting privacy data from AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. It's particularly location data, and selling it. So the cell carriers were selling it to Secure Us, and then Secure Us was passing along to anybody who wanted it. And the New York Times broke that story in May. So this is, I think, a good step. And I don't know if this affects Secure Us business, but I hope it does. I would love to see it put him out of business, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Decision number two might be a little more controversial. This has gone on for a long time, this debate over whether e-commerce providers should be required to collect state sales tax. And the Supreme Court ruled that, indeed, they should. The states now can force online retailers to collect tax for them. For a long time, I think one of the things that really made Amazon a success was, and I know I took advantage of this, you wouldn't be charged in California it's 8.25%, something like that, for sales tax. That's a big savings, so you'd buy from Amazon. A couple of problems with that. First of all, the state of California, I don't know what other states do, but I bet other states do this too, on the yearly tax form says, did you buy anything and not pay sales tax? Because you still owe it.
Yeah. Please pay us.
And how much was that? And send us the amount. And which means you'd have to lie on your state tax return if, you know, if you didn't want to pay that tax. So that was that was problem number one. I'm not saying what I did. I don't know.
Hands off for you.
Maury does my taxes. I'm sure he did the right thing. I have no idea. And then secondly, it was a big disadvantage for our local bookstore, for instance, that did have to charge sales tax. The original idea was if you don't have business presence in a state, you don't have to collect sales tax. Now you do. Amazon, by the way, had changed that policy. They went back and forth with California. At one point, they stopped paying associates fees in California as a way to strong arm the state legislature not to force them to collect the sales tax. That then they negotiated. They said, all right, we're going to give you a few years window. Now Amazon does. But what I didn't know is it only collects sales tax on the stuff it sells directly, which is about 50% of Amazon sales. All the marketplace sales, the third-party sales, Amazon says, well, that's up to the marketplace vendor. We don't collect it.
I was wondering how that worked.
Yeah. So Amazon only collects about half of the sales taxes. But it's people like, what is it, Overbuy? What is it?
Overstock.
Overbuy would be a good name for anybody I spend time. Overstock and Etsy were very concerned about this because they don't. Okay, this may be controversial. For a long time, the standard belief of internet fans was, no, they shouldn't have to. I think they should have to pay sales taxes. It's only fair. Collect them, not pay them.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I think as a person who drives on the highways in the state that I live in and wants family members to get good education in the state that I live in and good health care and wherever all the sales tax money goes, obviously, I want it for that. As a person who does most of their shopping on Amazon, kind of stinks. But moreover, yeah. I think that this makes, like, I'm already paying it elsewhere when I go to a store very rarely. I'm paying it there. So
but that's why you don't go to brick and mortar. That's why downtown, wherever the hell
it's
you live.
I don't like being around a lot of people.
Well, that's another reason. But downtown, where do you live in Missouri?
I live in southern Missouri.
How you won't tell us the town, but how is the downtown where you are? Is it vital? Is it growing? Are there lots of bookstores and coffee
shops? It's vital and it's growing, but I mean, I get your point here where these smaller stores don't get frequented as much. But one thing to understand about the Midwest and especially the town that I live in, there are quite a few people who are in older age groups who would do a lot less shopping than I do online. And so those places still get frequented quite a
bit. Interesting. Yeah, because Petaluma, I can tell you, we're lucky we have a, believe it or not, an independent bookstore, one of the few towns in the country that still has a private bookstore in its town. Thank God. But mostly it's antique stores downtown. I mean, all the regular retailers are gone. There was a department store. It's gone. There's a lot of reasons people buy online, but certainly giving them an 8.25% advantage seems somewhat unfair.
Yeah, it seems like it's about time. You know, we had a really good run of the internet commerce kind of getting up there. And after a certain point, it didn't make sense to charge tax. And at this point, I do want those small businesses to survive. But I'd like to walk down the street here in Brooklyn and get like my, go to independent bookstores as well. So it stinks, I think, for a lot of people who rely on that discount, but it's only fair at this point.
Come on,
yeah,
Ben.
It's up to you. Enough now.
It's up to you, Ben, to defend the entrepreneurial spirit of this made this country strong.
Oh man, no. I mean, I hate to admit it, but I'm for it too. I do think that the e-commerce is mature enough now that it can sort of bear the weight of this, so to speak. I do think that it's a good thing overall. I mean, I live in Massachusetts. We love taxes here, I think the state benefits from that. I think this change is good. I think the ruling is going to be a positive thing. I don't think it's going to wreck anything. I do think that it's going to be harder for some smaller retailers in some ways, but I think overall it's going to be a good thing.
It wasn't small retailers that challenged the South Dakota law that ended up in the Supreme Court. It was Wayfair, Overstock, and Newegg. Those are the three. And there was a precedent. In 1992, the Supreme Court had barred states from requiring businesses with no physical presence to collect sales taxes. So that was the precedent. And I guess you probably could look back and say, well, in 1992, there wasn't a lot of e-commerce, and along comes all of these online stores that really benefit. I think it's reasonable now to say, okay, Amazon's big enough. They can collect sales tax.
Yeah, almost too big, honestly. Yeah. Like, we're looking at everything Amazon is doing now. Amazon is terrifying as a company. So, yeah, this tax is mainly to make Amazon give up a little more.
It's an interesting cultural shift, isn't it? In 1992, we wanted more e-commerce. Now, here we are, 28 years later? No, 36 years, whatever. No, 26 years later. 45 years later. Now you know why I shop at overbuy.com.
Overbuy and Waystock.
Here it is, 26 years later, and we're kind of saying maybe we let these companies get too big. Let's bring back the mom and pop shops. I'd love to see some downtown retail.
Totally.
People even shop downtown as a political statement, almost, right?
Yeah. You mentioned some of the big places here in the town in which I live, and they're like, "Oh, you shop there? You go there?" It's like, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're talking Walmart. You're talking Walmart.
Well,
right?
Like Walmart or saying Starbucks even. They're like, wait, you don't go to the local, I don't even know what they'd call it, like the Brown Coffee Bean or something. Yeah. How dare you not frequent the Brown Coffee Bean?
We had it's cute little coffee shop in town called Deaf Dog Coffee. It was really great coffee. And it really pissed me off. Starbucks opened a store across the street. And they're gone. Deaf Dog, not Starbucks. Starbucks is far from gone. There's so many Starbucks now. There's a Starbucks in Canada with a Starbucks in the restroom. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, there's a. That was good.
No, there is an intersection, I think it's in Vancouver, with Starbucks on two corners the four. So you don't have to cross the street. Why would you want to cross the street to get a cup of coffee?
It's like Mattress Firm.
That's kind of
in the Northeast.
Are they everywhere?
Yeah, Mattress Firm is everywhere. It's like the Starbucks
We have a Mattress Firm.
How many mattresses do you need?
Yeah. What? That's actually an interesting business. I mean, you look at all the now online retailers. Casper is a sponsor of ours, but there's a ton of them, right? And and they all, I think they really came around because companies like Mattress Firm had such huge markups. It was almost, it was almost, I don't want to say a criminal enterprise, but
pretty close.
It was like, they had like 100% markups and more. And so that was a real an opportunity.
I mean, you have to lie on a bed that 10 other people have also, that hundreds of people have also lied down on.
Oh, come on. It's not like they had sex on it. They're just, they're fully clothed.
No, but they spread their germs all over it. And that's not
Now
ideal.
I know why you don't shop downtown, Micah.
Yes, I got to stay away from those germs.
People, they're full of germs.
You can't see this, but there's a big bubble around me just outside of the frame.
Bubble boy Micah Sargent joining us.
The great thing about internet commerce, I guess, is that it's really broken those old models. Like, mattress store, you walk in and there's like financing information. You have to finance your mattress because it's too expensive to pay all at once for most people. Yeah. It's insane. So I have a Casper. I love it. And I'll stick with those.
And actually, that's become a whole category. Dollar Shave Club, another sponsor of ours. Thank God for this category, by the way. The glasses, Warby Parker.
Warby's so good.
Because Luxottica bought up all and got a monopoly basically on frames and started charging hundreds of dollars for frames and opened. In a way, this is – and you don't – so what I guess what we're saying is you don't need sales tax advantage because there's other ways you can have an advantage. And now that people are comfortable with e-commerce, there's plenty of opportunities.
I was about to say, I think Leo, you're demonstrating to us that sales tax that this tax issue is not going to break e-commerce. No. I think e-commerce is going to be okay.
Yeah. Speaking of which, it's time for a visit from one of our advertisers. And you know what they do? They make it so you don't have to go to the post office. Why get exposed to all those germs from people at the post office when you? They're licking their stamps. Oh my God. No, you can get, actually, it's mostly convenience. I enjoy going to the post. I have a post office box. It's like an old key and it's an old Petaluma post office. And I don't love doing that. But what I don't want to do is wait in the line to buy stamps. You don't have to with stamps.com. When I need stamps, I can print them on my computer, my printer, It is fantastic. Postage on demand. And it's not just postage. Everything you would do at the post office, you could do with Stamps.com. Not only buy and print U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail, the mail carrier comes and gets it, so you don't have to get up from your seat. They will fill out the forms for you. If you're an Etsy or an eBay seller, and you don't have to fill out the customs forms if you're selling internationally. It prints a beautiful label for your package. It will suggest more affordable ways to send that package. You can buy insurance. Actually, you get a better deal on insurance from Stamps.com. They sell the same insurance, but they've got discounts you can't get at the post office. I can go on and on. It really is a fantastic deal. You'll create your account in minutes. There's no equipment to lease. It's not postage meter. No. You've got the equipment you need. No long-term commitment either. They'll even send you a digital USB scale that'll calculate the exact postage. If you've ever done this, added a few extra stamps just so you don't send it postage due, or worse, I got a package. It really is unprofessional from a PR firm that it was postage due. And it's like, that is not a good way to introduce your client to a journalist. Are you going to pay to get this product? No. It's exactly the right postage. Pay neither too much or too little. They'll even help you decide the best class of mail, save you money. They'll do all the confirmation information. They'll fill out of the form. Look, here's the deal. You can use Stamps.com right now. We have a remarkable offer. It's a $55 worth of free postage. It's a digital scale. It's a four-week trial. All you have to do is see that microphone in the upper right-hand corner at Stamps.com. Click that at the top of the page right there. Enter TWIT. I have to walk Karsten through it. He's only done it 1,000 times. And then you get our special deal. Go ahead, press go. Look at that. Wow, it's even got a picture of me. $55 in free postage, a free digital scale, $5 supply kit. Why wouldn't you do it? Go to stamps.com, use the offer code TWIT, and I think you'll never go back. There's an example, right? They call it Indicia. And actually, it was to the U.S. government's credit that they allowed companies to do this some years ago, create stamps, and it really was a big win for everybody all around. Very much what we were talking about. Devendra, you going to run out and buy the Oppo Find X phone? Did you see this?
I've seen it. It's a really cool idea.
It's got a motorized camera.
Yeah.
So no camera bump, no notch. You don't have to worry about putting your finger on the camera or anything. It slides up. In fact, it doesn't have a fingerprint reader on it. You have to use face recognition. And so, according to The Verge, I haven't played with it, but according to The Verge, slides up in under half a second and slides back down again to do your face recognition.
Yeah. I honestly miss the little moving parts in phones. I remember like the Helio Ocean before the smartphones.
I was going to say the same thing.
So good.
Yeah.
I want more gears. I want it to go zzz, zzz.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think,
I love sliding phones.
You know,
anything with sliding or flipping open, I totally miss that. I don't know why.
I feel like it's good because it's not slavish copying of Apple.
Sure.
Right. This is the Huawei P20 phone with a notch. In fact, they've even modified Android to be more like the Apple user interface, which makes it not so good.
Yeah.
Why slavishly copy Apple? But now, of course, this may wear out. Who knows, how it's going
to
work.
Yeah, it's one more thing to break. So it's a cool idea. I wouldn't want to rely on it for my day-to-day. But yeah, I was just in Computex in Taipei a couple weeks ago, and man, everyone just wants to copy Apple. And it's kind of sad. Yeah.
How was that? Did you enjoy Computex?
I did. It's a show that I think a lot of people say it's probably a little too old fashioned, but I really enjoy it because I like PCs and I like PC hardware. I wrote a big piece on Engadget about honestly, right now, PCs are so interesting and so exciting and so interesting. And we're going to talk about the Mac hardware. What Apple is doing, I think, is so boring and dull in comparison. You look at gaming laptops now, they're getting thin and light. Decent hardware in there, under 5 pounds. It's pretty great right now.
For a while, the PC industry was merely copying the MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Like the Ultrabook was. This is really interesting. You wrote about this. This is the Asus ZenBook S, which has a screen where the mouse pad is.
Yep.
The trackpad.
It's wild. It's wild. It's It's far more useful than the touch bar because you can't do much with the touch bar. But this thing, it's basically a second monitor. So you could drag a YouTube video down there. You could use it as a second screen for whatever while you're working. It still works as a touchpad, too. So it's a wild idea. You know, it's an Asus product. So mileage varies on like how well it'll work. But I love the conception. I love the execution there.
I actually, I have a soft spot for Asus. I don't, maybe because I used to buy their motherboards or something.
My first motherboard was an
Asus,
so I have
that. Yeah. What, did you see anything else you found interesting?
Well, they have that crazy gaming phone too, the ROG phone, which, you know, I'm not a fan of these gaming centric phones, but basically that thing is the most powerful smartphone on the market or will be when it's released. So they have some cool accessories for that. Just lots of cool, you know, ideas floating around there. In general, yeah, we saw this. They're dual screen PCs. These concepts popping up everywhere. Asus had one. Lenovo had one.
Wasn't there one where there's no keyboard? It's just a screen and then a screen?
Yep, two screens. Like, that's it. That's what we're seeing now. So Lenovo announced the next, I forget what it's called, the Yoga Tab or one of those. And then Asus has a concept product. We saw this thing from Intel. One side is an e-ink display, and the other side is a normal display. Just lots of cool ideas like that.
I have to say it is an exciting arena where for a while there wasn't very much innovation. Mm-hmm. There was the beige box era where everything looked the same. And then there was the copy Apple era where everything looked the same because it all looked like Apple stuff. But Apple's kind of dropped the – all right, let's get to the Apple story because that's the big story. I feel like Apple's dropped the ball a little bit. They finally – admitted that there's a problem with the keyboards on the new MacBooks. I kind of enjoyed Josh Topolsky's outline, headline on this, on the outline. What did they write? They were like, Apple capitulates, Apple surrenders. It was, I can't remember. It really isn't that bad, but they finally did admit that there is something wrong and that if you bought a MacBook or you bought one of the new MacBook Pros with these new butterfly keys. Yeah, there it is. Apple admits its computers are broken. That's a little strong. I'm not sure. I'm not sure Apple admitted its computers are broken. But they did admit there's a problem with the keyboards, and they're offering free repairs. Even more than that, if you got it repaired earlier and paid for it, they're going to refund.
Mm-hmm.
Why, that from Apple, that's unheard of.
That's great. That's what Microsoft did with the Red Ring of Death problem for the Xbox. So this is a problem on that level, pretty much, for Apple.
It cost Microsoft more than $1 billion mm-hmm. to fix all those red rings.
Yep.
They took a huge tax write-off with the Red Ring of Death problem. So
how why does it take so long for them to admit issues like this? That's an open question. I think it's just Apple, right?
When I like anything, if you write about an Apple thing, I will get contacted from Apple PR. Like, we don't like this word. We don't like the way you phrase this. Oh. And it's such a defensive company. And it's kind of ridiculous because you guys are winning. You'll be fine. You can withstand a little criticism.
You're going to be a $1 trillion company. They're the most successful company in the history of companies.
You could do so much for your rep by just like.
Ben, you don't want to admit it too fast either, right? What if there isn't?
Sure.
Apple for a long time said, no. In fact, they still say it's a small. Today, we launched a keyboard small service percentage. Program for a small percentage of keyboards. And, you know, they're still. And I, by the way, not just Apple, Microsoft, and this is getting to be a controversy, still says there's nothing wrong with 1803, the new Windows update. There's nothing wrong. Everybody loves it. When, in fact, a lot of people are reporting massive problems with the update. So every company kind of wants to.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's about sort of hedging bets, maybe. So sort of seeing if, you know, we've heard this and maybe it's just some people that are particularly loud and then their story spreads.
You never know.
Versus, and so if you admit too soon, then you end up spending a whole bunch of money where if the problem goes away, then they don't end up having to spend on these repair and return programs. But I'm glad that this one is getting taken care of. And it does seem to be in no small part influenced by the coverage that took place, not just the fact that there are people who have this keyboard problem, but all of the coverage that's taken place about this particular issue.
Well, and there are three class action lawsuits.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But yeah, when Rene Ritchie, who is an you work with him, we love him. He's on MacBreak Weekly, and he loves Apple.
Yes.
When he says there's a problem, then I think you start to pay attention.
That is sort of my stick the finger out and feel which way the wind is blowing thing. Yeah. It's if Rene is going, this is really bad, then I'm like, wow, this must really be bad.
And again, no disrespect.
Rene finally admits Apple's laptops are broken.
They're finally broken. Yeah. I mean, this goes back to 2015. This is the MacBook that came out early 2015. That was the first design of the butterfly keys. And then MacBooks from 2016, 2017, and MacBook Pros from 2016 and 17.
Yeah. What's ironic about this whole situation, I remember when the butterfly keyboards came out, and I was complaining about them because they feel awful. They're terrible to type on, and it takes a bit of learning because it's so shallow. There's no key depth there. And Apple's big reason for making this change, they said, is that it would not break as much. You wouldn't get crumbs under the keys. And it's kind of hilarious that after all that, the keys break. And when they break, you can't just replace the keyboard. They got to replace the whole top, the whole front of the laptop. So it's such a mess on many levels for Apple.
And there are a number of questions still. Apple says, first of all, you have to have a problem. Mm-hmm. If you have to have letters or characters that repeat unexpectedly or don't appear when pressed, or keys that feel sticky or aren't responding in a consistent manner. What's unclear is what are they going to do to fix it? And they say it may involve replacement of one or more keys or the whole keyboard. That's a $700 repair if you're out of warranty. So mm-hmm. That's not an insignificant repair. But I'm with you, Devendra. But I think that's a matter of opinion whether you like the butterfly keys or not. Sure. I don't like them either. I got rid of my butterfly key keyboards. But
I had to get a mechanical keyboard, like some kind of gaming jerk.
Some kind of animal. Do you, but has anybody experienced the sticky keys or the problems?
I haven't, but two of my colleagues are currently having the same issue with their MacBooks.
Renee, I think, had it on several of them.
Yep. Rene had it, and a couple more colleagues from Mobile Nations had it as well. I never got that machine. I'm still rocking the mid-2015 MacBook Pro, which I love and adore.
Yeah, just stay there.
Me too. I'm using the 2015. I love it.
It's a great machine.
The keys move when you press them.
Exactly.
It's amazing. They're reports you'll actually use. It's amazing.
It's amazing. No, the 2015 is very good. Somebody called the radio show today and said, I need a new iMac. When are the new ones coming out? And all I can say is no one has any idea. Apple's very consistent. Every year, in the fall, there will be a new iPhone. Every year for 10 years. They're less consistent with the iPad, but it's fairly consistent. There's new models every year. With a Macintosh, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
There's no consistency at all. We have no idea. So, I guess there's nothing more to say. If you have one of those keyboards and you're having problems, bring it to the Apple store and God bless you.
Spill some jelly on it and take it to the... No, I'm just kidding.
Have to admit. Okay. But I think that sometimes maybe the people... Because it doesn't happen to everybody. Does Rene eat over his keyboard a lot?
Hold on. Let me call him really quick.
I have to think.
Rene, do you drink your Phil's coffee over your keyboard?
Somebody's eating croissants. A lot of
There's got to be dirt. What am I trying to say? Crumbs or something getting under the keyboard.
I mean, you're literally going to get the dirt on it.
I don't want to cast aspersions.
Get the dirt on it. Okay,
but I suspect it might be behaviorally related.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I don't have any crumbs under my keyboard, and I know it's not that keyboard, but I don't.
Is that
know.
A euphemism? Right. Ain't no crumbs under my keyboard.
Hey, no crumbs under my keyboard. Not my fault. Not my doing. I like that.
As long as we're on Apple, I guess they're going to do the wireless charger sometime between now and September, according to Mark Gurman. Bloomberg Business Week. Bloomberg. Mark, who is kind of the most connected Apple rumor guy, says engineers hoped for a June launch. They announced it, by the way, June of last year. They're aiming for September. This is unaccountably difficult. They say, Apple said, or somebody says, it's really hard, which I find difficult because, in fact, there are plenty of wireless chargers that could do multiple devices out. You just have to put multiple coils in.
I would really love to skip the next 15 years and get to the point where, like, you just put any device down on any surface and it's charged.
I would like to skip the next 15 years for other
no
reasons.
Surfaces.
Air charging.
Yeah, exactly. Wireless. Air charge.
Yeah.
Problem is, if I skip the next 15 years, I'll be in a pine box. So.
Oh my God! You better knock on wood.
Can I keep my age and skip the next 15 years? Can I just, like?
I mean, yes, come on, yes, Leo. That's what I'm. You know, you're going to upload your brain to the internet, Leo. Oh, like that's where everything's going.
I'm just praying that this comes out before and I'm hoping that, like, the guy who's inventing this right now is a fan and says, you know who we should. Because otherwise, it's going to be Ray Kurzweil or, you know, somebody like that, President Trump. But I'm hoping that some guy who's like a real geek said, oh, you know who we should really pour into a can? Leo's brain. And I volunteer. You could do it today if you want. I don't care.
You would do it today. If someone came to you and said, you can be uploaded to the internet today, you would say yes?
Wouldn't you? Oh, you're young. You're young.
Not today. No. Not today's internet.
Your penis still works.
No. Oh, my God. Hey, no crumbs under my keyboard.
I'm so sorry. No, I would do that. Wouldn't you want to do that? You wouldn't want to do... Okay, maybe if you were my age, would you want to do that?
I think I would need someone else to go first, Leo. So once you did it, and if it worked just fine, then I'll join
you. That's a good point. That's actually a good point. Because it'd be bad if, like, I were glitchy, like in Westworld.
Yeah,
right?
Beta Leo.
My whiskey would... pour out or something. That would be bad. What would it be like? Would
I asked Neil deGrasse Tyson that once, and he said he was like, you can't go to the beach if your consciousness is uploaded to the internet.
Been
you
there,
can't
done that. I'm ready to forego sand in between my toes. but you can't go to the beach, but you could go to Mars, Neil. You could be anywhere the internet goes forever. Yeah.
You could have a robot do the stuff that you want to do.
I don't need to feel anything.
Which, again, back to your earlier comment.
There's people have germs. I just want to. So what would it be? Would it be like my how would it look? Would it be? I wouldn't have a physical manifestation, right? My consciousness would be in the internet.
I think that's the idea, but I would see it more like, what's that episode of Black Mirror? San Junipero. Which, spoiler for the best episode of Black Mirror. But, you know, that is all about digital consciousness. And it's a world that you live in and interact and have experiences. So it wouldn't be like the internet today. Hopefully it'll be like, you know, a actual virtual reality or something that you could jump into.
Which one was that? Was that the one where they shrunk the people and they put them in a little thing? Or is that
No. It's where older folks go under... and get put into this other world. Oh, so it's like the future of elder care in a way.
I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah. I gotta watch that one.
It's amazing. I will not.
It's really, really good.
Something's wrong with Devendra. Yeah. I think he poured his brain into the internet and it didn't work.
He's coming through. I'm gonna bust out of the television.
Reboot whatever device you're stored
See,
in.
We let Devendra go first.
the internet's not ready.
It would be Max Headroom, wouldn't it be? It'd be Leo. That'd be kind of fun. I wouldn't mind that. I would. I don't know. I always thought that would be kind of cool. We're gonna reboot Devendra. and fix
it.
While we're doing that, let me talk about it. You know, it's interesting how many of our sponsors are based upon this kind of basic premise that the old brick and mortar way of doing things isn't working and there's a better way. This is Betterment. You know, I always say this. Why would you go down to the guy who hung a shingle out on Main Street saying, I'll help you with your investments? If he's so good, what's he doing working downtown? If he's that good, wouldn't he just invest for himself and be rich? That isn't the best way. There is a better way to invest. It's the largest independent online financial advisor, but online's the key. Betterment is designed to help you build wealth or plan for retirement, maybe save for college, advance your financial goals. And they do it because it's automated. It uses technology to take complex investing strategies and making them work for you. Things like, and this wasn't really an issue till the stock market got pretty volatile, things like tax loss harvesting, which takes advantage of losses to offset your tax consequences and thereby make you more money. It's actually really amazing. You probably thought you could do this yourself. I know I did. When I found out what Betterment's doing, I realized there is a better way. Betterment is constantly adjusting, rebalancing, fine-tuning your investment. Normally, if you said, if somebody said to you, well, I'm going to trade regularly on your behalf, you'd say, well, yeah, that's going to cost a lot. No, no hidden costs at Betterment. No matter how much money you invest, no matter who you are, that's the other thing. You don't have to be a millionaire. It's all for one low, transparent management fee. You still get, if you want humans, you still get humans. You can still get advice from people, but they're fiduciaries. That means they don't get, they don't invest on their, they don't have their own products. They don't invest on their behalf. They're not incentivized to recommend funds. Everything they tell you is on, is for your best interest, not theirs. That's really important. I don't care where you get investment advice. If you don't get that, that's, those are table stakes. That's the baseline. You've got to get somebody who's working on your behalf. You can get personal advice. There are, it's a wonderful app that'll give you a really good look at where you stand and what you're doing, whether you're on track to hit your goals or get the retirement you want. You could get guidance and help, but you also take advantage of their platform. It's really great. Investing does involve risk, of course. I won't lie to you on that. But if it's done right, you really, this is the way you need to do it. And if you're young and you start putting money away now for your retirement, you will do great. You just need to do it now. Go to betterment.com/twit. You can get up to 1 year managed free. Betterment.com/twit. There is a better way for, you know, everything, including investment. Betterment.com/twit. All right, we got Devendra back. We rebooted his bottle. And his,
my brain's all right.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, here's a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
If you took your consciousness and poured it into some machine, and it was from the outside world, it responded just like you. It's just like you. It had all your memories. You know, you would still talk just like you. But is it you?
That is, that's the deeper question. I studied philosophy in college, and like it is something I feel like they've been talking about forever, and it's going to get even more complicated once all these things actually start happening. A lot of people think like there's just no way to capture consciousness, right? We don't know how that works. We don't know like how to bottle it up, like you're saying. So in many ways, like a construction of your consciousness is just like your memories and maybe some elements of your personality. That's certainly not just you. But I do wonder, like, will we ever have the ability to just capture purely what makes us conscious? Will we ever know what that is? I don't know.
There was a science fiction story, I remember, that said every time you teleport, you're creating a new you. You're killing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You're killing yourself.
Are you talking about The Prestige?
The Prestige. That was it. Yeah. There was a magician who had this great that Tesla invented for him, which is hysterical, way of transporting himself. But it always ended up leaving a body, his old person, dead.
Right. Well, no, he created a way of duplicating himself. It wasn't transporting.
It was duplicating.
So that was it. Yeah. It's horrifying and amazing movie.
Yeah, it really.
I think if you upload your consciousness to the internet and it evolves in any way, like it changes for better or for worse, then it's you. I think if it's a static personality, then it's not you.
Oh, that's a good
point. Oh, yeah.
So that's growth good. Equals consciousness.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or if you start to go crazy, which I'm afraid would happen to me if I uploaded myself to the internet.
Well,
I think that's also you.
And it's interesting that as we're getting closer to this being a reality, we're also learning more and more how much our biology really is us. Now we know that the biome, that several pound blob of bacteria and stuff in your gut, actually determines much of your personality.
It's pretty helpful. Yeah.
So
you're on the edge today, Leo. I like it.
Yeah, but it's I'm not making it up, right? That's
no,
true.
No, you're not.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you have a This Week in Transhumanism show yet? Because we need that. Yeah.
We should.
Totally.
Is that what they call that, transhumanism?
The whole idea of like augmenting yourself, and I think like the ultimate goal of like Kurzweil and everything is to live forever as a digital consciousness. And it's out there. It's pretty crazy. But look at what we're doing. Like I think of like when I play MMOs and stuff, and like how much of myself is just purely online and existing through my avatar. Eventually, what will be the difference between purely existing in that?
If a lot of your experiences in life are virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Those are still experiences.
You didn't, for sure.
You didn't experience them in meat space. Or did you? Actually, you did, didn't you? Because it was just another stimulus to your meat.
Yeah, that's something you said.
Ain't no crumbs under my keyboard. I mean, honestly, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about this. It's like Elon Musk talking about how this is all a simulation because it's ultimately circular. There's no way to really answer it. It's just
all speculation.
Right. Yeah.
But there's that guy, Zoltan Isban, I believe. Like, he's a member of the Transhumanist Party. He's in California. I talked with this guy. Really interesting fellow and really is all about pushing forward the idea of transhumanism and what that could mean. There are people who really want to, promote this stuff right now. It's kind of fascinating.
Don't you feel like Zoltan Isfan's real name is Herbie Schwartz or something like that? like that's a convenient...
I'm half convinced he's a Superman villain, so I don't know. Like, the entire philosophy is basically like, it does sound like proto Lex Luthor or something. Yeah.
You know, Karsten, he does just live down the road a piece in
Mill
Valley.
Yeah, get him on the show.
Let's get him up here. I want to interview Mr. Isfan. That's fascinating. He's apparently running for a governor.
Yep.
California.
He reminds me of that guy from New Hampshire, Boothead, whatever his name is. That, you know what I'm talking about?
Boothead?
No. But that, as somebody from New England, that makes complete sense.
Is he running for governor?
He's from New I think it's New
his name
Hampshire,
is Vermin Love Supreme.
That's the guy.
He's known for wearing a boot as a hat and carrying a large toothbrush. Wow.
Look at that picture. Give that guy.
He looks like Rasputin. I think Rasputin did not in fact die. He says if elected president, he will pass a law requiring people to brush his teeth.
Mm.
So take the other guy, make him skip 15 years, and he's going to look like this guy.
I would require everybody to brush my teeth.
Brush their own teeth.
brush your own teeth. You know, a little later on, we've got a toothbrush sponsor on the show, so I'll bring this back. He also campaigned on the platform of zombie apocalypse awareness, time travel research, and he's got my vote. He promised a free pony for every American.
Okay, I'm sold.
Do I have to brush
the pony's teeth? Or do they take care of that?
Hell yeah. You don't want to have, dental health, even for ponies, very important. Come on, let's get back to tech, Leo. Get your head in the game.
I like where this is going.
Apple has announced publication, along with the Car Connectivity Consortium, of a new digital key specification that will let you unlock your car with your smartphone. An open standard so that others can unlock your car with a smartphone too. I don't know. What could possibly go wrong? Yeah.
Who needs this? Nobody needs this.
Well, I feel if it's more secure than the current key fob systems,
which is highly insecure, right?
Yeah, the key fobs stink. So if it's tied to your phone and if it's more secure, if you could give access to a friend who's borrowing your car or something, like that sort of thing could be really cool as long as it's more secure. This uses
NFC, which means you'd have to touch an NFC-enabled phone to... It's so funny because Apple for years, everybody else had NFC. Apple wouldn't do NFC in their phones for years. Then they finally did it a couple of years ago, and they still wouldn't let anybody else use it for a couple of years. It had to be Apple Pay or nothing. They finally, like this year, announced an SDK for NFC. Now all of a sudden, NFC is great. We should use NFC everywhere. It's like they discovered it.
Yeah. I mean, it existed, but nobody was using it well. I think that's Apple key, right?
All right, give them some credit for that.
Yeah.
Audi, BMW, General Motors, Hyundai, LG Electronics, Panasonic, Samsung, Volkswagen, Alps Electric, Continental Automotive, Denso, Gemalto, NXP, and Qualcomm all are in the consortium. It would use NFC, interoperable digital key use cases. It will let drivers lock, unlock, start the engine, and share access to their cars. This is what you need it for because of car sharing, right?
Yeah, they already have that. They have the card, right? The Zipcar card.
But that needs special hardware. You need the box and stuff for that, and it's the whole thing.
I'm on the record for hating this idea. I think it's a bad idea.
I like the idea of being able to use this NFC technology for all the things. Right now, Apple just at WWDC was talking about how it's working with certain universities, I believe just in the US right now, where students can use their Apple Watch or their iPhone to get into their own building, to get into the gym, to basically anywhere where they would use their badge.
That was cool, yeah.
And I've got a few friends who are in digital effects stuff for Hollywood, and like they have to use a badge to get into the buildings that they work in. And to be able to, you know, tie in with HR programs and use their Apple Watch or their phone to get into the building, I think that would be awesome. And so, yes, if we can make sure that this is more secure than the less secure fobs, if I have like from point A to point B, all of these different places where I can use my phone or my Apple Watch, be it maybe like my front door even becomes NFC, my car becomes NFC. When I go to Starbucks, you know, again, either using Apple Pay or using the Starbucks card, if I could NFC all the things, I'm down. I think it'd be great.
I like it in theory, but I guess my problem is like, what is the actual problem it's solving? And to me, like, right. I look at how my, like, my dad uses his phone, and then I imagine, or tries to use his phone, and then I imagine him trying to open a car with that phone.
Can you come give me a ride? Like, I can't get my car going.
And then I think about law enforcement, right? Like, we were talking about this, you know, I mean, again, not to get too weird about it, but, like, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of, like, technology unlocking my doors. I don't know.
Let me
call me old fashioned.
How about if I make it broader than this? I think the mistake is saying it's a car key. Really, the issue, there's so many issues. This solves one issue, but there's a lot of other issues, which is purely the real problem is authentication.
Right.
How do you prove you are you, whether it's to your car so you can start it, or to a company so you can buy something, or to a website so you can log in? How do you prove you are you? And if somebody came along and solved the authentication issue, and then by doing it digitally allowed it to be like what would happen with a car is you'd say, oh, this person who has a solid, real, genuine authentication is allowed to drive this car. But so what they're really solving is authentication.
Right. And the phones have the authentication piece, right? It's your fingerprint, it's your face, it's the biometric authentication you use to unlock Apple Pay or whatever. That would all be tied into this. And
but then Ben's nightmare scenario really is more real, because now this phone not only has everything you know, I've done in the last year, it has my it's who I am. It's my identity is in this phone.
Yeah, I mean,
we do it now. That driver's license has my identity now.
All of my stuff's already on my phone, and I trust, you know, like that's the thing is we are always trading convenience for security and trying to find the balance between those. And it's the world in which we live, and we sort of have to either do it or don't do it. Yoda would, would know a little bit about that. And I think that, you know, with my phone, if I'm worried that a police officer or something is going to try to now get into my car using NFC, I just push these three buttons while the thing's in my pocket or something, and now they can't access it without having my password. They can't show it up to my face. They can't do any of that stuff because that's a feature that, you know, that Apple has.
Strong authentication solves that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And Apple has built in, and actually, you know, on Friday I interviewed Phil Zimmerman, the creator of PGP. He was still a crypto guy. He teaches crypto at the University of Delft in Holland, but he's also a privacy advocate. It's interesting. I did not know this, but he got into the whole PGP thing because he was an anti-nuke advocate, and he wanted people to be able to communicate privately as they fought nukes, not nuclear power plants specifically, but nuclear weapons. But he's still very much involved in all this. And I forgot where it was going. Oh, well, he uses an iPhone, and he says it's because of the secure enclave. He said, and this is the fix to PGP too, is you need the problem with PGP is your private key is a vulnerability. You have to store it on a computer. It could be stolen. You know, it's passphrase protected, but that may be not perfect. What he says is the way to solve this is hardware based security. Like he says, it should be in a phone. Like he started Silent Circle. They created the black phone. Remember?
Mm-hmm. I was about to say, he doesn't use the black phone. He uses an iPhone, not the black phone.
Yeah, well, black phone A is out of date. But he also said, you know, our mistake was we didn't understand the phone business. And without carriers, without, you know, you can't really sell a phone and just say, good, you have it like a computer. You have to, you know, you have to have an infrastructure. He says there are some Android solutions like Samsung Knox, some hardware enclaves there. But he really liked how Apple has solved this problem. Mm-hmm. So no wonder Apple's in this consortium. I think it's a mistake to say it's just about car keys. Let's do now. Are there political issues? Is this like a national ID? Is there a problem there?
Oh, dear. I hadn't heard that. Maybe you just sparked that in everyone.
Oh, sorry. No, nothing like a national ID. You know why? Here's the thing. Oh, I got the solution. Blockchain.
Oh, well, my word.
Here's $1 million, Leo.
We'll fix it with blockchain. No, seriously. So here's the problem with a national ID. It's centralized in the U.S. government, right? Centralization, if you're worried about that, centralization is the issue. If you know, if we trust the U.S. government today, but what if you didn't trust them tomorrow? A national ID system could be used. Mm-hmm. Well, we just heard news stories about the Border Patrol asking people for IDs as they drove around New England. Are you a citizen? It turns out, I looked into this because I thought, that's weird. 2/3 of the country is subject to this. The law says that if you're within 100 miles of a border or a coast, that the Border Patrol can ask you for proof that you're a citizen. Within 100, that means here, that means mm-hmm. pretty much New York City, everybody. So that's why people are afraid of a national ID, right? Is this papers, please? This whole notion that a adversarial government would use this against you. But if it's blockchain, it's decentralized. So you can have a ledger system that is decentralized but secure and strong that includes identity information. What about that?
I like it. Sure.
Okay, I'm going to do an ICO. I can count on you guys.
Sure, yes, totally. Indeed.
I'm in. Yeah.
You get all my
as
Bitcoin.
As long as you can still use a coat hanger to unlock the door on the car.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to put it in the car. This is more important than the car. Actually, there were the cover story in this month's Wired magazine is all about blockchain and ICOs and crypto. It is a wild story. It was a long read, but it was kind of an interesting story if you haven't read it. Now, let's go on to this issue. As long as we'll do a couple more Apple stories and move on. Supposedly, a researcher found a way to unlock iPhones by streaming passcodes to it. If you do it fast enough, the iPhone doesn't lock out. And since a 4-digit code is only 10,000 different choices, you could brute force a phone. Then Rene Ritchie wrote an article, your colleague and mine, wrote an article that said, not so fast, Apple says this actually is a mistake. It's erroneous. However, what neither Apple nor Rene has mentioned is, well, in what way is it erroneous?
Right.
So even the original researcher said it's no hack. But again, he's not saying in which way it's erroneous. So I'd like to know more about this.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I wish I had more information on this because, yeah, we just got the testing was done wrong or was the testing was done incorrectly. I can't remember exactly what it was that Apple said, the precise statement.
The guy said it looks like all of the pins as you stream those out are going to the phone and being tested. But he said they aren't always sent, so they don't count. So you may miss the actual code. You may go whizzing by it, and the phone hasn't actually seen it, so it won't unlock. So maybe he got lucky, and the code that he was using worked. But regardless, there is a very good lesson here, which is don't use a 4-digit
exactly.
code. And modern iPhones you should take away use 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even this guy says, well, 6 is so long, it doesn't work. It's too long.
So, don't they make you do 6 now?
6
too?
Is now the standard, yeah.
Yeah. So
I use it, and this is a pain in the butt, especially because I'm doing it on the iPhone 10, which sometimes doesn't recognize me. I use it's 15, it's a long.
Yeah, mine's really long as well. Yeah.
But that means for some reason, the iPhone doesn't recognize me when I'm on the pillow like this. I don't understand why.
Now, why wouldn't that work?
Why doesn't that work? So I'll end up in the middle of the night having to go,
where'd Leo go?
Sometimes, and this drives my wife crazy, I'll sit up and smile at the phone so it unlocks, and then I go back.
That sounds like a dystopian future, by the way. I want my fingerprint sensor back because it's just so much easier for those situations.
Apparently, we're going to be getting sideways face detection soon.
iOS 12
is working on that now. So
are you joking?
Sideways
or not?
Is good.
No, I'm not joking. What they're doing right now is iOS 12 does face detection from the side.
What about pillow distortion? Are they going to handle it?
Pillow distortion, see, our phones don't have object permanence. So they're sort of like toddlers. You cover your face and you think it's gone.
Yeah.
It's more like the angle thing too. Like when I'm on the bed, like you got to angle the phone the right way to kind of get it to recognize. Yeah.
So you all have this experience?
Yes, yep. It's an everybody thing.
I thought it was just me.
Now, Face ID is great when it works, but we need them. Need the thumb back.
Do you sit up and smile?
Yeah. I just turn my face a little bit. I don't smile. I just turn my face a little bit.
It's not just me. I thought I was a weirdo.
That would be a great art
piece. We're just all weirdos.
Just old faces. Your phone at night.
You see. Actually, I do, because of this, I keep a couple of fingerprint capable phones near the bed.
Oh my lord.
Stupid.
Oh man.
Stupid. This is one of them. I was mentioning the P20 Pro. This is the Huawei that you're not supposed to buy that, you know, the president said. No, the president doesn't like ZTE. The Commerce Department doesn't like Huawei.
Mm-hmm.
And now I understand why, by the way. This is an Android device. Now you tell me what you think of this. So in the setup, it asks, before we actually get to the Google login and the Android stuff, it says, would you like to know local weather? And I say, yeah. And it says, okay, I need permission to access location, the IMEI number, and your MAC address. Really? You need that for local weather?
Yeah.
And then you go on, and then there's other...
It's really good local weather, Leo.
It's really, yes. Hyper-local.
Hyper-local, yeah.
Like where you're sitting right now. So I figure anything I put on this phone is uniquely identified and sent right back to China, right?
Must be.
That's the word.
Like it's a safe assumption to make at least. Better to not use it.
Isn't that
I don't want to support the Trump administration's fear mongering, but there are certainly like issues, right? There was also, remember a couple of years ago, Lenovo computers coming in. We found spyware on them, and it wasn't Lenovo doing it. It was just happened in transit. So there are a lot of things we have to be worried about when it comes to cybersecurity.
Well, I also somebody called the radio show and said, "Can I get a router that's not made in China?" My husband is a tinfoil hat and will not buy one that's not made in China. And I really, I mean, I don't.
That was my wife. That was my wife, by the way, who called.
So can you get anything that's not made in China?
That's the worry. Like, even if it's designed here, it's probably manufactured somewhere.
I looked at the Eero. It's made in China. Asus makes routers, and they're a Taiwanese company, but then I checked, and some of their stuff's made in China.
Yeah.
I guess it has to say on the box, but I don't, you'd be going to the Best Buy going, no, not this one. Made in China. I don't know what you'd do. So I think you just kind of live with it. What are you going to do?
That's why we have security researchers, and I love following all of their paranoia. Yeah.
But what is the real danger? I mean, whenever we talk about this stuff, it's like privacy, particularly. It's like, but what is the, what? I mean, the insurance company is going to revoke your insurance because you had a donut on Friday? No. What is the real danger? I understand security. There's some real dangers.
I think people are worried about like a hidden attack, a Trojan attack of some kind that's undetected and widely deployed.
Why do I care if somebody in Beijing knows everything I do with my phone?
Right.
Should I care?
Here's the thing. I think you should, if not for yourself, I think that caring about this is important for those of us who have been given this responsibility and this platform to talk about tech and talk about the future of tech and sort of where we are now and where we want to go. If we don't advocate for consumer privacy and consumer protections, then companies don't, you know, they start to push back on that kind of thing and they don't pay as much attention to it. And so while it may not be a big issue for us individually, and I certainly have in the past had that mindset of like, what do I care? But, you know, it's not too difficult to imagine a bad future. So a future that we don't want to live in, where our protection for our privacy, then that's where people start sort of categorizing people according to who they are and like, I mean, any number of possible ways to discriminate against people could easily be used in the future in a dystopia based on the fact that we don't have user protection and privacy protections. So I just think it's important for us to advocate for that.
Most definitely. Like, if we don't care, nobody else will. But I was thinking, right after Trump was elected, the Brooklyn Library here did something really cool. They did a 1984 discussion, I think, for 84 weeks, for a very long time, for like the entire year. And I did one of those discussions. I was surprised that people, you know, this is a small, smart group of people who didn't hear about any of the metadata collection that Snowden revealed.
Really?
You know, they didn't hear about all the stuff that was happening. And I was kind of shocked because these are, you know, these are doctors. These are people who are paying attention to issues around their civil liberty. They want to talk about a book like 1984, and they're not aware of this huge thing that happened and affects all of them. So, yeah, I think we can't ignore these things for sure.
It reflects how we live in a bubble.
Yeah.
Because we all, this was like top of mind.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know what I don't actually know what the connection is to the news this week of how people are being separated, how families are being broken up. But you look at, I guess what I would say is you look at stuff like that that is happening right now and the information around that. And I think it's not a huge jump to imagine that you need to protect yourself and your data, considering how things might be used against you in the future. I'm really taking on the tinfoil hat mantle, but I do think that you look at some of the news that just the non-tech news that has been happening over the last week, and over the last months. And I don't think it's a bad thing to sort of keep pushing on personal privacy, personal security protections in the U.S. and elsewhere.
I think that belief is at most a tinfoil headband. It's certainly not a full tinfoil cap. Like, I'm with
By
you.
By the way,
I'll rock the tinfoil headband.
In the interest
you.
Cool. All right. of science, yes. I just want to point out that people have tested tinfoil hats and they actually conduct radio waves better.
Yeah. Oh, no.
They don't protect you. Just keep that in mind.
The Faraday cage headband.
Yes.
Yeah. What you need is a copper mesh
head cage. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why the guy wears a boot on his head. Who knows? You know, but
what does he know?
What does he know?
Yeah.
No, I understand what you're saying. And I look at China too and see how privacy and, you know, they're using face recognition in much more aggressive ways in China. They've got a social contract system that does actually look like Black Mirror. So you see countries, and Russia too, authoritarian countries, acting against their citizens by invading privacy. I'm not sure who I'm more afraid of as Facebook and Google get more powerful. Are they more to be feared? I mean, they don't have tanks and nuclear weapons, but at the same time, they know more about me than anybody. I don't know if I fear government more than I do feel a private industry, but it is clear it's something we should pay attention to. That stuff is, and a lot of it comes back to this smartphone and how much we're storing in there and carrying around in our pocket something that is always online, has GPS, microphone, camera. This is the perfect spy device, and we all carry them all the time.
Yeah.
So if it's not that, I don't think there's a real risk right now, but if it were to all go south, this could be really used against us, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, there was a recent story, or someone was making a joke about Domino's. They have this new thing where you can go online and apply to have your potholes filled by the company. So the company is going around and filling potholes in certain cities. And the whole joke is like, we want to get the pizza delivered to you and everything's going to, you know, it's going to get there smoothly because there won't be potholes. And
I
looking
saw
at that
ad. Are they actually doing that?
Yeah, that's a real thing. Yeah,
yes.
They're giving grants to cities to be able to
Do
pay
they
for
put
those.
Domino's on the pothole?
No, they're not.
They do? Like,
you see,
somebody's in the audience is telling me, do they do it in Georgia?
Oh, maybe it is on the pot. Okay.
They stencil a domino on the thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I didn't know it went that far.
This was big on Reddit.
That is freaking great marketing. Because honestly, how many times have you lost a pizza to a pothole, really?
But here's the thing. We see that now. How long
pothole
until,
crisis.
Like, Long John Silver's is going, okay, maybe you want us to hold your traffic courts for you. Like, we'll take care of that.
Got nothing wrong with that.
This is some idiocracy future here where the brands control everything.
Yeah. And they start spraying Gatorade on the fields because it's got vitamins.
It's got electrolytes.
They use our face tracking data then to like better market to us. I mean, it's just like all of these horrible futures that we can imagine in which our privacy is like so important that we have that stuff now and locked in before we get to the future where, I mean, we're already there apparently. I didn't realize they were stenciling Domino's logos onto the potholes.
I actually don't. I mean, we live in the pothole capital of the world, Petaluma. I think this is a good thing. What's wrong with Domino's fixing it?
Nothing now. I'm talking about a future in which we rely, instead of on our government and the sales tax that we're charging Amazon for, we rely on these restaurants and brands to take care of things for us.
Steyer Shrek in our chat room says, actually, it's fitting because their pizza tastes like asphalt.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
They did admit their pizza didn't taste good. Like,
what?
That was part of their marketing campaign a couple of years ago. It's like, oh, yeah, we're sorry.
It's our not pizza great pizza, but it's fast. And
look, they're one of the only ones that offer a gluten-free pizza and that doesn't taste terrible. And so I have love in my heart
Micah,
for Domino's.
Eat some gluten, for Christ's sake. You look like a stick.
That's why.
What happens when you eat gluten? You get gassy? What really? Seriously?
No. So what it does is it causes... Okay, here we go. It causes your digestive system to actually flare up internally, so you actually become worse at being able to get nutrients into your body. So,
everybody like, or just you?
No. Well, anyone who has a gluten intolerance or has full-on celiac,
Celiac, I know, because that's... I have friends with celiac. That's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, mine is not as severe as that. I just have a gluten intolerance. So it's... Now that I don't eat gluten, I can get nutrients better. So I'm perhaps not being as scrawny.
My problem is not lack of getting nutrients. In fact, maybe I should eat more gluten, I'm thinking.
Is that a weight loss?
It's like a weight loss strategy.
There you go.
I'm gonna eat nothing but gluten. See what
I mean?
Happens.
It's like the better coffee thing. Like people are gonna make a diet out of every dumb idea at this point.
I know. Hey, let's take a little break. This is fun. I don't know why I'm in a mood, but I'm glad you guys are here to share it with me. Maybe it's because you're so good looking. Ben Brock Johnson is here from WBUR. He's a senior producer there. You may remember him from the Codebreakers podcast and. Of course, he was on Marketplace for a long time, and Marketplace.
Yes, sir.
I forgot.
Rizdahl. You were talking about Ajit Pai a little while ago.
I forgot that's
Kai who interviewed him.
Yeah. Was it Kai who interviewed him? Kai's great.
Yeah.
And Molly Wood works there now. We love Molly. Is she still there?
I think so.
You guys,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. At the Brock Johnson on the Twitter. Thank you. Great to have you, Ben. Also here, Devendra Hardawar, senior editor at Engadget and a snappy-ass dresser.
Thank you.
From beautiful downtown Brooklyn.
Not downtown Brooklyn. Can't afford to live there.
Is there a downtown?
There is a downtown. It's gotten a lot better recently, too. More livable, I'd say. They put up all these crazy skyscrapers, and that's controversial. But there's an Alamo Drafthouse there. There's a lot of cool stuff.
An Alamo Drafthouse, I want to live. I love Alamo Drafthouse.
I'm 15 minutes from it on the subway, and I love it so much.
You go to the movies, but they feed you tacos.
Or whatever.
Do they have? That's the one in Austin. I'd probably in Brooklyn.
They have. I think every location has a different menu. But they have a nice selection. I don't do it for everything because I do think that adds up so much.
Yeah, there's a lot of gluten.
And your movie nights get expensive when you go there.
In Brooklyn, they feed you artisanal cheese and fig jelly, or something. I don't know. Also with us, great to have Micah Sargent, senior editor for Mobile Nations, MikahSargent, on the Twitter.
Wait, was Devendra talking about Alamo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Now I'm locating myself, but I have an Alamo in the town I live in.
No, you don't. So. You do not have an Alamo. Alamo Draft House, the movie theater?
Yes, Alamo Draft House. Yes.
Well,
you don't believe me.
I'm moving to wherever the hell it is if I could ever find
it's Springfield.
Out.
Springfield, Missouri.
Oh,
we've
famous.
Got an Alamo Draft House here.
Famous. That's where the Simpsons live.
No, they're like in...
We don't know where
it's
they
like
live.
A mixture. Yeah. It's like could be Springfield, Illinois, could be Springfield,
you have
Missouri.
An Alamo Draft House?
Yeah.
Ben, is there an Alamo Draft House in Boston?
I think there is. I wish. Well, actually, maybe there is. I don't know of one.
There's one in San Francisco now.
I left Brooklyn recently enough that I was going to the one that Indra is close to. Mm-hmm. But, man, almost every time I went there, I got in a few times. It's like always sold out. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I saw a really bad movie in Austin there, Burn After Reading, but I enjoyed the beer and tacos.
You know, that movie, watch that movie again. It is grown up, more prescient than you think. Yeah, it's not a great Coen movie, but it's
all
smart.
I remember is George Clooney carrying a sex pillow around for...
Yeah. And Brad Pitt is like an idiot.
Wait, is that the one with the chair?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Woo, yeah, that one.
And Frances McDormand's in it too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's what a great. Flick.
Who's the gym owner, the dumb gym owner? Is that Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt.
No?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not Brad Pitt?
Not owner. He works at the gym. Okay.
He works
at,
John's
a stickler for accuracy. Our show today brought to you by Eero. Eero's a hero as far as I'm concerned. About 2 years ago, they decided to fix Wi-Fi. And now they've done it for so many people. The advantage of Eero being around for 2 years and so many people using it is it gets better all the time. They learn and they get better and it's upgraded all the time. Firmware upgrades. You don't ever have to worry about things like VPN filter infesting your Eero because they do firmware upgrades all the time. They were never vulnerable. And you know, really, Wi-Fi used to be good, but then we put about 100 different devices on our Wi-Fi network. My Eero says I have 42 devices running on my Eero, and then your neighbors have Wi-Fi, and pretty soon it stops working. Eero solves that. They solve that. The second generation Eero and the Eero Beacon, that's what I've got here, allow a customer to build a Wi-Fi system that's more perfectly tailored to their home than ever before. They offer more speed, more range, still though the same, look at that, the high quality, elegant design people have come to expect. The second generation Eero is now tri-band. They have a third 5 gigahertz radio. So they use one of the radios for a backhaul, but it doesn't slow down your internet like an extender will because they have full duplex on the rest of the channels. It's twice as fast. You can do more in every room of your house. You know what I like about the Beacon? It's also a nightlight. It's got a little nightlight underneath it. So I put these in the hall where they can spread Wi-Fi best, and they light up the hall, which is cool. You could turn off that light if you want. I have one in the bedroom I turn off. I actually have five Eeros all over the house. I love it. They have now Thread Radio, which means you can connect to low-power devices like locks, doorbells, other sensors, and more. They're always adding new features. You know, the other day I said, oh, I could turn on IPv6. So I did. Expanding coverage in any room is easy. With an Eero Beacon, you plug it into the wall, and you're covered. If there's an outlet, you can have Wi-Fi. Love our Eeros. In fact, I like it so much, I got the new system and gave my mom the old one. So mom's got an Eero too. And you know what's neat is I can check on mom's network. So when mom says, hey, my internet's down, I literally can open the Eero app, switch over to her network, and see what's going on. Oh, mom, you must have kicked the one loose in the kitchen. And she can fix it. Let's switch over to my network. I think there's a few more devices on my network at home. 35 connected devices, and there'll be more when we get home. Eero.com. If you want free overnight shipping to the U.S. or Canada, go there, and when you buy it, select overnight shipping, then use the offer code TWIT, and it'll be free. Life's too short for bad Wi-Fi. I got Eero when I finally got fed up with the, honey, the Wi-Fi's not working again. You don't want to hear that ever. Get Eero. You will never hear it again. Eero.com. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Speaking of devices in your pocket, devices with microphones, Amazon's putting Echoes in hotel rooms now. There are two kinds of people in the world now. People who don't mind devices with microphones in them, around them all the time, and those who do. I'm wondering what Micah and Ben and Devinder, what group are you in?
There are microphones everywhere on me.
I've got all the assistants in your pocket, so why not have it in the house?
Yeah, I've got all the assistants hanging out, waiting for me to bark at them.
Ben,
bark command.
Are you a paranoid? Do you wear a tinfoil hat?
I'm a little paranoid, but I will say, you know, if my phone is with me, then I feel like that counts. So I use Google's assistant all the time and I love it. So, I did get a Google Home. It's still in the box because the other half of my family won't let me take it out of the box.
Interesting.
So I'm not the only paranoid around here, I guess, but, but I do think having them in a hotel room, as long as there's no video, I think it's probably a good thing, right? Like you, especially if you could actually turn the television on instead of like turning on the disgusting clicker,
right?
Using the disgusting clicker or being like, hey, can you call down to the front? Like being able to just talk to a speaker and
you can order room service or something. You can request housekeeping. Yeah. You could play music. It will control the blinds and the TV in some rooms. It's a special version of Echo. It's called the A word. I don't like to say the word out loud for hospitality. And it's initially going to be at select Marriott's, Westin Hotels, St. Regis, Aloft, Autograph Collection Hotels. The Wynn in Vegas, and I think the Aria, a couple of hotels in Vegas already had Echoes, but they weren't special Echoes. Mm-hmm. The real issue is how do you reset? So they need to reset it when you check out and set it up for somebody new. According to Amazon, the Alexa for hospitality, the A word for hospitality, commands are deleted daily. Hotels do not get access to the voice recordings. So when you do room service, it doesn't send a recording down to room service. It actually just does a readout or something saying, you know, send some hot dogs up to 743. However, hotels can use A word for hospitality to measure engagement through analytics.
Or what does that even mean?
I know.
Yeah.
That sounds suspicious. Or customize the deployment by choosing default music stations. Marriott's going to offer TED Talks.
Because there's no other way to get TED Talks. Yeah.
So I guess maybe they can see how many people are using the call to room service functionality.
That's the analytics they want, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I have all pretty much all of them in my house because I got to test them. But I do agree, like there are people saying there's a suggestion out there that you shouldn't buy these things for your family or friends unless you know they want it. And that's the thing. I wouldn't want to put this on somebody. So, yeah, Alexa makes a lot of sense for a hotel room. But hopefully, you know, if you don't want it there, you could just call and they'll take it away. For me, it got a lot more useful. Once I added smart home devices, so once I can control my living room lights with Alexa, it's great. Would be really useful for stuff like that in a hotel. I'm worried about that aggregate data. I'm really worried about Amazon as a data collection, you know, company, because more and more I'm losing faith in them in terms of, I don't know, what they're doing, too.
It's a brilliant strategy, though, right, to get Echoes everywhere, just everywhere. Mm-hmm. You can get the Roav Viva, put Echo in your car. I just got the Fire TV Cube, which has Echo.
What do you think about that?
I actually like it. It's not – so the idea is you use voice commands to turn your TV on. It will control your TV. I didn't have any trouble. It knew immediately what brand of the TV was, and it controlled it immediately. Turn my AV receiver on. It also recognized the brand. I don't know how, but it's on the same network. Maybe it queried it. It doesn't control like your Apple TV or your Roku. What a surprise. It will control some set-top boxes, not TiVos, but some cable company set-top boxes. So in theory, you could say, you know, watch Channel 7. But it's great because if you use Fire TV, if you use Netflix or HBO Go or Showtime Anywhere, NBC, ABC, if you use one of the channels available, they don't have YouTube, weirdly enough, but one of the channels available on a Fire TV, all of those can be controlled with a voice. So I can walk into my office and say, Echo, watch Westworld. It will pop up a screen that then shows the movie Westworld and the TV show. And then you have to say, play number one. So there is some more interaction involved. But I could say, pause, turn up the volume, turn down the volume. And I love, the best part is I can walk out of the room and say, Echo, turn the TV off. And it turns the whole system off, which is nice.
Nice.
So it works. I mean, it's $120. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's limited in its scope. It's not the ultimate remote control, you know, universal remote. It's just,
I mean, these set-top boxes are getting boring, more boring and more boring every year. So they got to have to put in some other features, right?
To be able to control stuff with my voice.
Yeah.
Although now I imagine Amazon knows everything I watch.
Yeah.
Right. Which ads I stay in the room for.
which television you're using because it
they know the brand
whenever you set up the cube.
Yep, they know the brand. They know, you know, I mean, it's better than Nielsen. It's basically a Nielsen people meter. But again, it's like, well, so I don't know. How can that be used against me, I guess, is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a right. Do you think it's possible that with a duly written law enforcement warrant, that law enforcement could say, just turn on Leo's Echo. Let's hear what he's doing.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know about
that. I mean, I feel like there's some sort of precedent that would be against that immediately, because wouldn't you be able to do that for any phone, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like wiretapping
regulation. What if you wrote a national security letter that said you can't tell anybody? It would have to have a warrant. I'm not saying it could be without a warrant. But why can't they? See, so I asked Phil Zimmerman, PGP creator, about this going dark issue. Because law enforcement's saying, oh, we're going dark. All this encryption. We can't tell what people are doing. It's terrible. He said, they're not going dark. In fact, there's this thing called Zimmerman's Law that says with technology, the abilities to surveil people increase logarithmically. And I think he's right. He says, basically, law enforcement now has an incredible high-def screen. They can see, you know, everything going on. There's a few little black dots because they can't hear your Skype or read your messages. A few little black dots. They don't like that. They don't want any dead pixels. They want a perfect screen. But they sure as hell, he says, are not going dark. They have more ability to surveil you than ever before. Cameras everywhere. Microphones everywhere. I have to agree with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that seems fair. And I like that. I like that metaphor.
That's a good one. Yeah. You know. Yeah, I'm going to use it from now on. I just
good, good. Yeah.
But at least I give him credit. You can use it because you got it from me. It's secondhand. You can just pretend.
Just toss it around.
Pretend you thought it. Yeah.
So guess what? There's this big screen.
Stacey Higginbotham, who is our co-host on This Week in Google, wrote a good article on her. Stacey on IoT. Amazon's Echo Everywhere strategy is brilliant. Helping me. I have to say, I thought Google was going to kill them. And along comes Google Home. Google's got all this AI skill. They're going to kill them. And Amazon is not so easily killed.
Amazon
they just gave it away for free, basically. Yeah. That's why.
The way they climbed into the like the normal consumer space, as in not the people who are super big tech heads, and then the people who are sort of one ring removed from that, but like the everyday person for some reason just latched on to these Amazon voice devices, and more you see so many people talking about this, you know, the Echo devices in their home, and the way that Amazon started by making sure that it could work with so many different developers in terms of IoT. I think that that really helped kick things off because there were a lot of people, you know, playing around with smart home stuff who wanted the ability to control all of that with their voice. And Apple wasn't doing a great job at the time of integrating with a lot of them. And then the Google Assistant, that integration came later. But Amazon just did a really good job of getting it out there and getting it out there quickly and sort of somehow convincing the mass market that it was a good idea to have this product. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was really the voice control stuff too, because we had, you know, voice commands on our phones before the A word came out and the Echo. But Amazon, I think, did it a bit smarter, and they have a history as a company of just making unique products that nobody else really saw the need for, right? Like the Kindle. And their bet on cloud computing, I remember, too, was kind of controversial at the time.
And now they're dominant, right? Amazon Web Services is number one easily. Yeah.
Yeah. So they make these big bets, and they don't always work. There was the Fire Phone, right? But good, smart bets. And I think, the key is tying it all to IoT stuff. IoT devices, I never wanted a Hue set before I had an Alexa or something
too.
Like that. Yeah,
and now I love it. When I go to bed, I say, Echo, turn the lights off. I love that.
It's perfect. It's great because who wants to go to an app to control their lights when you could just go to the switch and just hit a button? Like
that's not easier.
Voice control is easier.
Yeah. It drives my wife crazy. And as a result, drives me crazy because she goes on and goes around and turns off all the switches.
Oh, no.
So now I have to go on and turn on all the switches, and then I can say, turn the lights off.
See, that's why smart switches, smart in-wall switches are so much better than smart bulbs.
The next step, right?
One more step.
Yeah. Here is from Stacy's Stacy on IoT blog. This is courtesy voicebot.ai. Look at the skills. This is for the Amazon Echo. When it was introduced, you know, it took about a year to get 5,000. Now there are 30,000 skills. And this is going to be important too, isn't it? Apple started to recognize this. If you want to make Siri smarter, you get third-party people developing tools for it. And Amazon owns this one, right?
The problem is there's only, of that 30,000, there are only 5,000 that are worth anyone's time.
Well, there are 20,000 fart skills.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like cat sounds or dog sound. There's so many terrible
There's a lot of bark sounds. Yeah.
But there's a lot of room for people to experiment. I was, I saw at, ToyCon in New York this year. There are a lot of board games that use Alexa in cool ways.
Have you done the Westworld game yet?
I have not done that. But there are it's cool amazing. Things you can do like that. Yeah.
So you can. So I think you have to say something like Echo access the Westworld skill or task or something like that. But then it has like it's an audio game. Mm-hmm. I think Skyrim has one. This is really interesting.
Yeah.
To me. Yeah.
Voice activated. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah, that's basically exactly what it is. Yeah. Exactly what it has been. Yeah. I have to give Amazon, you got to give Jeff Bezos some credit. He's a smart guy. And I think you have to give Amazon some credit for seeing something that is now maybe one of the hottest, most interesting areas in tech. These voices.
And they probably recognized before anybody that Bluetooth, like wireless speakers in general, were a hot item, right? Yeah. Like all the, remember Jawbone and all those things, like they saw how much those things were selling. So I think they kind of extrapolated that consumer demand. Adding some functionality on top of that, they probably saw where that was going.
That's interesting. So Amazon has the data because they sell everything. So that gives them a leg up on what to do next.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I never even thought of that. New York Times had an article. Might have been yesterday, the day before. Amazon's house brands. Do you know that they have 100 house brands?
They kind of obfuscate a little bit. It's hard to sort of know other than the ones that specifically have Amazon. Yeah, you kind of have to go look for the list, and it's like, wait, I've purchased that before. I didn't know that was Amazon's
brand. Spotted Zebra for kids' clothes, Good Brief for men's underwears, Wag for dog food, Rivet for home furnishings, Lark and Row sells cap sleeve dresses. And on and on. And these are all really Amazon. You're buying it directly from Amazon. It's just that they realize that you want to buy it from a brand. So, you know, Amazon Basics, I buy a lot of batteries and stuff from Amazon Basics. Yeah. But there are many, there's 100 other brands.
Amazon Basics has the name in it. But yeah, Amazon Basics I've used Amazon Basics a ton. Like I buy all my Apple stuff from Amazon Basics, basically.
What's interesting is, and this is the New York Times contention, this could open them up to antitrust action. For instance, if you go to search on Amazon for Ralph Lauren polo shirts, you won't find them, but you will find Amazon Essential polos, and you will find GoodThreads polos. And you might say, "Oh, good, I've got a couple of brands. Both of them are Amazon."
Yeah.
I've purchased their pins. And then Google had some problems with this, right? Some
Google shopping cost them a little money in Europe. Yeah, exactly.
It's very similar.
So apparently Amazon sells retail analytics, and you pay 1% of your wholesale cost of goods to Amazon to get these, or a minimum of $100,000. And you get Amazon's premium version of their retail analytics. In other words, this is exactly what you were saying, Devinder. This is how Amazon develops new products, and if you are willing to spend a lot of money, you can get access to that as well. You also get the negatives, right? Mm-hmm. They get all the reviews. They get all the returns.
Yeah, it'd be nice to, as someone selling things, it would be nice to have this information for sure.
You don't get to be the richest man in the world with a lemonade stand. You own all the lemons.
But it is crazy, like Amazon flouts its weight in such strange ways, right? Like there are things like for a while you couldn't buy Apple products. Was it through Amazon?
That's right.
You can't pre-order Disney movies on Blu-ray through Amazon, you can buy them when they're released, but you can't pre-order them.
And why do you think that is? What's their retail advantage there?
Well, I think because they're selling movies. They're selling digital movies. So right. I wonder if you can pre-order the Amazon one. I haven't looked into this fully, but I just see them doing these things that are very forceful and very, you know, it's not a free platform after all. It's right. their platform. But the way they kind of strong arm the competition.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's messed up. Yeah.
There was some Google news around that too, right? Like the whole, I think it was Chromecast and a couple of other things. Yeah, it's really interesting to see them throw their weight around that way. I mean, it's terrifying.
Well, and publishers have said this for years. Publishers have said for years that Jeff is murder on them, talking them down. Let's take a little break. Devendra Hardwar, senior editor in Gadget. Great to have you. Ben Brock Johnson, WBUR, senior producer over there. The Brock Johnson on the Twitter. And, of course, Micah Sargent, senior editor at Mobile Nations. See, I'm not the only senior here. We'll be back in just a second. We're going to take a little break, though. For those of you who were here every second of every day all week long, there was some good stuff on Twit this week. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
And now you've got to be careful around voltage. And many times we have more than 12 volts hanging around a field day site. And we want you to see what occurs at 100 volts. That is your body with 100 volts passing through the inside. So don't let this be you.
Windows Weekly.
Arlington officials last year, this is in the Journal today, Arlington, Texas, will start construction on a 100,000-square-foot arena for live video game competitions. Oh. And it's one of a number, according to the Journal, of growing number of venues dedicated to esports. This is about to break out. And I would imagine the attendees probably consume far more food and beer.
Some of these guys will probably have to be wheelbarreled in, you know.
Security Now.
All of our listeners know that I have rather infamously been sticking with Windows XP because it works just fine until yesterday morning when I was unable to bring it back to life.
But you're going to use a more modern version of Windows, right?
I'm on 7. Yes, I'm now on 7.
I think it'll be faster.
Boy, is it fast. I'm just not used to it.
It's normal. You've just been on a slow machine.
I used to think, boy, these pages have gotten so big since the Stone Age.
Twit, now in color.
Oh, I'm excited. We finally, after many years, Steve's Windows 7 review. We can't wait. Hey, let me talk about toothpaste and toothbrushes. I got a good one. First of all, we have a friend who just went to the dentist and said, what are you? Oh, it was Debbie. It was Lisa's sister. He said, what have you been brushing with? This is amazing. This is the best checkup you've ever had. She said, I've been using Quip. He said, I hear more and more people using Quip. Quip is the only subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. But here's why I like it. An electric toothbrush, I think we can all acknowledge, is a better way to brush. In fact, I've used an electric toothbrush for so long, I forgot how to brush. I get a manual toothbrush and I go, my hand doesn't work that way. I just like to put it in my mouth and zzz. The Quip does all of the important things, like it buzzes every 30 seconds to say move to another quadrant. But here's the thing. First of all, it's a lot less than any other electric toothbrush, $25. And they have a subscription plan where they deliver you new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. That includes free shipping. They also, though, they've got other things that I love about it. They've got a little mount that goes right on your mirror so you will never forget to brush. It's got a little adhesive sticky on it. It goes right there. So you see it when you go into the bathroom. It's so inexpensive, you can have multiple. We got a couple because our 15-year-old has sleepovers all the time, and they never bring toothbrushes. It's always, I guess I forgot it. No problem. We have your Quip right here. We just get heads for all his friends. We have it right here. It's also the ultimate travel toothbrush. It's lightweight. It doesn't have a charger. It's battery powered. And it goes for months. So you just replace the battery and you go for more months. So it is perfect for traveling. Everybody loves Quip. Not just me. Oprah put them on the O list. Time magazine said it was one of the best inventions of the year. And as I said, it's the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the ADA. Backed by a network of 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and of course, hundreds of thousands of happy brushers who use Quip every day. If it's time to replace your old toothbrush, maybe you just because you want it, They do sell toothpaste by the subscription too, but you don't need. I mean, it's just this is the best way to get a toothbrush. Get your Quip. Go to getquip.com/twit. Starts at $25. You get your first refill pack free when you use that special address and purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. First refill pack free. Our gift to you at getquip, getquip.com/twit. Smells minty fresh. Getquip.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. If you lost money to Mt. Gox, some very good news. The Japanese courts have allowed, apparently, I didn't realize this. You remember that this was a big scandal, right? Mt. Gox, where everybody put their bitcoins, one of the early wallets, one of the early exchanges, was hacked. And, I like that. It was hacked by disco fiends. It was hacked, and they lost 850,000 bitcoins, at the time valued at almost $500 million, now a lot more. Still the biggest theft of bitcoins in history. Mt. Gox discovered 200,000, almost half. Well, actually, it's a quarter of those bitcoins. But it's been frozen ever since in the bankruptcy ruling. They finally got a court 4 years later to say, you know what? Unfreeze this. At least you can repay people. And the good news is, because Bitcoin's gone up so much in value since then, many people who have lost money in Bitcoin will get their at Mt. Gox will get their money back. So if you did lose money in that Mt. Gox failure, please seek redress. There will be a claim filing process. You'll have to somehow prove, and this is going to be the hard thing.
Oof.
Yeah, that you had that Bitcoin there, and they'll solve this all. It might be a while before you get your money, but at least there's some hope. That's got to hurt, you know. You lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in imaginary money.
Yeah.
Hurts even more when it's imaginary.
I have a lot. I had 130,000 in imaginary money because I forgot my password, and I have 7 bitcoins sitting in a wallet. I'm looking at it, but I can't get into it. Now, when Bitcoin was 20 grand, that really hurt.
Oof. Now, why was that not in a password manager?
Good question. I asked myself that over and over again.
Okay.
Like, why didn't I put this in LastPass? I put everything else in LastPass. I was using LastPass. And what I realized is I probably used a password that I thought, oh, this is a standard. I don't have to remember this.
Okay.
Right?
So it's probably written on a piece of paper that's been frozen. It's in a freezer somewhere. You got to unfreeze it, and then you'll have that password back.
I don't know what I was thinking. My son drives my son crazy. He says, well, how can you lose your password? What do you think of this, guys? You got to explain this to me. A new IBM robot held a debate with a human, and I think won. At least it did all right.
It did all right.
Project Debater made its public debut in San Francisco this week. It squared off against Noah Ovadia, who is no slouch, the 2016 Israeli debate champion, and then against another Israeli debater, Dan Zafrir. It turned out to be a formidable opponent, scanning the hundreds of millions of newspaper and journal articles in its memory to quickly synthesize an argument on a topic in a position it was assigned on a spot. That's what happens in forensics, right? You don't get to choose your position. You don't get to choose your topic. You have to do it quickly. It's a 5.5-foot skinny black rectangular screen.
A monolith, yeah.
A monolith. Stands behind a podium, just like a debater. I don't know if it has a voice.
It's from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
And
It looks for sentences and clauses. I want to see this in journals that are relevant to the topic. And then they say it thinks, but obviously it doesn't think. It's not trained on topics, though. It's trained on debate.
It's interesting that it didn't it didn't respond to the contentions that I did debate during my secondary education. Essentially, the bot lost in the first instance, because the whole thing about debate is someone puts forth these contentions, these arguments that they have, and then the job of the person who's coming against them is to refute those contentions. And there's a very simple concept that if those contentions aren't refuted, then it's silence is acceptance, meaning you didn't argue against my points, and therefore you accept what I've had to say. And it says in this article that the project debater was supposed to respond directly to those points, but didn't rebut them directly. So it's not there yet, but I mean, what AI is.
Let's get Mike in the room with this thing.
Yeah, clearly. Mr. Forensics over here has got to get involved. Let's see, what else? Fortnite made $100 million in its first 90 days on iOS, and that's for a free game?
Oof, when you were talking about the gaming phone earlier, I was going to say that I have talked to many people who play this game on their phone, which blows my mind, because I play it on a PlayStation 4 and get my butt handed
still get
to
clobbered.
Me every
me too.
Single time.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing port. This and PUBG both have really good mobile versions, and we've never seen that before. So now all of a sudden, yeah, the idea of a mobile gaming phone kind of makes sense too. Yeah.
Yeah. The game is amazing, though. I can't believe they still haven't put out, like, the actual game hasn't come out yet, right?
Is that why it's free?
No, this is the model. This is it.
This
it's
is
just
it.
Printing money.
But it's not freemium, because you can't buy better weapons or better... you can only buy, like, funny outfits and dance moves, right?
Are you serious? And they've made $100 million?
Yes!
What?
Yeah.
You don't like to dance, do you? You're not a dancer.
No, of course I'm a dancer, a real life dancer, not something in the game. I don't understand the appeal. What does one get by getting a dance move?
Well, honestly, dancing I think is used as taunting.
Yeah.
So when you dance,
but like when you go to your deathbed and you're lying there and it's like the last thing you get to say, it's not like someone's going to approach you and say, "Man, that dance you had in Fortnite that you paid $5 for, I'll never forget it." It's just such a waste of money and
welcome to mobile gaming.
Do you feel okay? Like we're slowly edging our way into, if it's not Idiocracy, it's WALL-E.
Yeah.
We're slowly edging our way into some odd future where children will live their entire life in a floating chair and I don't know.
It feels like that's the goal of the entire tech industry right now. Like I'm looking at all the scooter startups and just thinking, man, just walk. I don't know.
Somebody in the chat room says it's literally a Tracy Ullman sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So get ready, because the next big thing is esports. Professional video gamers are getting their own stadiums. This is the Wall Street Journal. In Arlington, Texas, a 100,000 square foot arena for live video game competitions will start construction soon. It's just one of many. Here is the Esports Stadium Arlington. It'll be a 30,000 square foot competition space. I think you guys have one out there in New York. There's one in Burbank.
I think there's something, yeah.
Yeah.
All they need is good air circulation, please.
Are you saying something about these guys not bathing regularly? Is that your implication?
Sweaty gamers. I used to manage a computer lab, and like I had to post signs like, please just shower.
Steve Jobs very famously didn't bathe because he thought his vegetarian diet kept him from smelling.
Yeah.
He was the only one who thought that, by the way.
This is why I stay at home and shop on Amazon.
This is the 74,000 square foot Burbank, California arena built by Blizzard to play Overwatch. Fans come and stay as long as 24 hours. Some of these things last forever. Now
that's not going to help with the smell.
Now, by the way, somebody in the chat room, Faux Pas, says esports is not a thing. Stop saying it. It is a thing.
It is a thing.
If they can afford to build stadiums, it's a thing.
The Fortnite developers, the ones we just said made $100 million on iOS, have said, we're going to take that $100 million and put it towards esports purses. And Fortnite has taken off. If you look at Twitch, which used to be the League of Legends network, right? Fortnite easily beats League of Legends and everything else, including PUBG. Here's an arena in Vegas at the Luxor. This is an esports arena at the they've actually opened 6 venues, the Allied Esports folks, since 2015. No, I think it's a thing. If it's not a thing, these people are throwing away their money. I think it's a thing.
It's a thing. And honestly, it's kind of fun and exciting to watch, but you have to understand the game. That's the thing. I know it's a tough thing for anybody to just jump into.
I think that's one of the reasons Fortnite is a good game for this, because it's how hard is it to understand? 100 people parachute into an island and the last man standing wins. There's a lot of little things going on that you may not understand, but it's fun to watch. I love actually, because I get waxed in the first 5 seconds every time. Yeah. But the nice thing is you can continue to watch. And what's really fun, you watch the guy who killed you get killed. And then you watch the guy who killed him. And then you watch him get killed. And then watch the guy who killed him. And all the way to the guy or gal who wins, which is actually an inspired thing. Get ready, because pretty soon it's going to be illegal to do memes in Europe.
They should be illegal.
This may or may not come to fruition, but it is out of committee now, and members of the European Parliament will be asked to vote on this in the next few months. It's a new European copyright law that would require online platforms like Facebook, but Reddit, and even 4chan to censor content before it gets online. They'll have to have an automated content recognition system like YouTube has. And if something like this grumpy cat is in a image or photo or music that's uploaded, they have to block it. They have to block it.
You went too far, Europe. You went too far.
You finally went too far.
Yeah. You got too excited.
Article 13, which effectively deputizes social media and other internet companies to act as copyright police. A lot of people, including Bruce Schneier, Vint Cerf, Tim Berners-Lee, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Wikimedia, and on and on and on, are lobbying against it. The final form of the proposal went through committee and passed on June 20th. The parliamentary plenary session will get to vote on it the week of July 4th, or if it doesn't pass there, then when the European Parliament returns from the summer recess in late September.
Aren't memes inherently transformative?
That's exactly right. Now, I know that sounds like a joke, but what you're saying is it's a fair use exemption because it's transformative. But the problem with the content recognition systems, as we know well, is they don't understand transformative or parody or any of the fair use defenses. They just look and say, well, that's the same image. I know that image. And block it.
Yeah. I think somebody got Rickrolled really badly at some point. It was just like, and the ball.
Shut it down.
Cory Doctorow said it's collateral damage of protecting copyright, that free expression, even legitimate free expression, commentary, criticism, parody, will get hurt just as much as, copyright violations. So pay attention. If you're in the EU, we're always saying this on the show, if you're in the United States, contact your member of Congress. Let them know how you feel. Well, now we can say, if you're in the EU, contact your member of the European Parliament.
Call the Queen.
Call the Queen.
Meme the Queen.
Meme the Queen!
Don't think that'll help anymore, unfortunately. All right.
Last topic of the day. What do you think? IGTV. Thumbs up, thumbs down. This is Instagram's new competitor to YouTube. It's going to feature as long as an hour videos on a dedicated app. What do you think?
I'm mad about it so far because I've been getting notifications from people I do not care at all about saying, oh, go check out this IGTV video. No, thanks.
You don't want to watch Roy Purdy get jiggy with it?
I don't want to watch anybody get
jiggy with anything. Really. I think that's a fair rule. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, we may be outside of the core market here for Instagram, but it seems like the dumbest thing in the world. Like, I don't know how many people are just going to sit there and watch one thing on Instagram. But I think the joy of the app, you may spend an hour on Instagram, but you're hopping between your friends and social media people and all different people. You're moving around. Sitting there and watching one video for an hour seems a bit much.
Also, it's vertical.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I'm less mad about that. I see so many people using their phones in that way and recording video in that way, and so many platforms that make it easy to view video in that way.
Yeah.
So that doesn't bother me. Like, it's really just the fact that it's exclusive to these content creators that Instagram decides are content creators, and the way that it's like seemingly trying to take on YouTube a little bit, and it is not at all going to do that. And Instagram, I think, did a really good job with Instagram stories and made it this really easily accessible and sort of more premium version of Snapchat in a way that I see a lot of people use Instagram stories and really like it. And then it's just like, why do we have to throw in this other thing that makes this? I already sort of get sometimes annoyed by the quote unquote influencers that are on Instagram that I have to sort of scroll through at times. So I don't get this.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with Mike, especially the part about, I didn't actually realize this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea that they're trying to curate who gets in on the ground floor of this, like, that seems super problematic if you're trying to take on YouTube, for sure.
The press release says IGTV is focused on the creators you love most and already follow on Instagram.
Yeah.
You can upload it, but will it get featured and will anybody see it? I don't even like the Instagram stories, although obviously I am out of date on that because that seems to be very successful. One of the things they said at this announcement is Instagram now has 1 billion monthly active users. Hmm. God, you feel for people like PUBG and Snapchat who invent something, they create something, it's awesome, and then along comes somebody, copies what they're doing exactly, and takes all the audience away. I guess MySpace has to go on that list as well. I guess that's the way it is. The way it is. Certainly, we wouldn't try to create content specifically for IGTV. On the other hand, we're very happy to be on YouTube. So,
yeah.
All right, you guys qualify. You can all pour your brains into a vat. You're all too old.
I can't wait.
You're all too old.
Yes.
Hey, thank you all for being here. I know everybody wants to go because it's Westworld, the last episode tonight, and you just got to get ready, get your cowboy hat and boots on, right?
Micah Sargent. I already got my boots on.
You got your boots on? You're ready?
Boots are on. Just got to get on that cowboy hat. Right away on a horse to the...
There's no crumbs under my keyboard.
Exactly.
You'll find Micah Sargent at Mobile Nations. He writes for... Do you write for more than iMore? Do you write for them all? Or?
I mostly write for iMore, but occasionally show up on Android Central more than any of the other ones that we have, yeah.
And tell me about your podcast.
All right, I'll tell you about my podcast. I've been sharing this one, so I'll just continue to talk about it. It's a podcast called Lucid. You can go to lucid.show. It is a sleep science and dream interpretation podcast. So we have listeners send in their dreams, and my pal Tori Folk and I will actually interpret the dreams on the show. It's a lot of fun. You get to learn a lot about sleep and everything surrounding sleep. So be sure to check it out, lucid.show.
You know what we got? And I really like it. It's only $60 on Amazon. Serta sells this thing called the Sleep Tracker. I actually found out about it from Philippe Kahn because he is Motion X. He invented this. It's a little thing that goes under your mattress. You can have one for each side if two people share a bed. And then every morning it tells us our sleep score. And Lisa and I noticed we're really paying attention to that. It tells you how much REM sleep, that's the dreaming sleep, how much deep sleep, light sleep, how many times you got up, if you got up, things like that. And I find that really fascinating. And I'm wondering, I bet you there'd be some way to use that to trigger lucid dreaming or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because lucid dreaming is going to happen when you're in your REM sleep.
Yeah, and it knows when you're in REM sleep, right?
So, yeah. So if it could create a sound, like a lot of people try to tie it to a sound or to light that sort of shines on their eyes. And that helps you sort of realize that you're in that stage of sleep. There's a lot to REM sleep that's really interesting. So check out the podcast. You'll learn a lot more about REM.
And I'm going to talk to Philippe and see if there's some way that he can modify this. So that, because I don't know how it knows, but it knows when you're in REM sleep. How would it know that?
Your heart rate is different. Your breathing is different.
Oh, okay.
It's all tied to your respiration and circulation.
Yeah, because it tracks heart rate and breath rate. It knows, I don't know how, but somehow it knows respiration and heart rate.
And the fitness trackers have been doing that for a while, since Jawbone, some of the earlier Fitbits, yeah.
So, what is it? The trigger would be just a sound, and I would just get trained to that sound and then
exactly.
know. Oh, I'm dreaming, and then within your dream, you recognize you're dreaming. Now you're lucid dreaming.
Yes, exactly. And there are plenty of little tutorials online that walk you through the process of learning what your sound or your light, feedback is.
Yeah. Or you could just take Ambien.
This is true. We just did an episode on Ambien. Yeah. There's a Reddit thread that everyone should check out. Reddit, I don't know what they're called, but you can read about people's experiences on Ambien.
It's actually a Reddit subreddit called Things You Did on Ambien.
Yeah, subreddit.
/r/Ambien. Come for the cats, stay for the empathy, it says. You know what? I have some stories. And I'm going to leave it at that. Things I would never have done awake. Like this show. Ben Brock Johnson. He is at WBUR. I like saying W. I started in radio at WYBC. I like W's.
W.
W. How do you say it now? Do you say it like W?
I think I say W.
W.
But if you're Bob Oakes at WBUR, you say double Q B U R.
Double Q B R.
Yeah,
I like it. Double Hugh. I gotta
double
try
Hugh.
That. Double Hugh.
Double
probably
Hugh. Probably
one of those two voices, colors. Right? Double Hugh. Be you all.
Bob Oakes.
Bob Oakes. Yeah. Ben, what do you want to plug?
Oh man, I have a podcast too, and it's about Reddit. So that seems like a good transition.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's a endless thread. We don't do dream stuff yet, or we haven't done dream stuff yet. We just did an episode about this axe murderer in New Orleans who said, this is from a Reddit thread. Obviously all of our stories come from Reddit threads. And this one, this guy wrote the Times Picayune in 1919, I think it was, and said, I'm going to kill a bunch of people, but I'm not going to kill anybody where jazz is being played. And for one night in 1919, apparently was like the biggest night of jazz in all of New Orleans at the time.
What's fascinating during the era. Is until that time, New Orleans was known for classical music.
Well, it is funny. We talk about this in the episode. Jazz was sort of struggling in the city at the time, and there were people writing editorials saying that New Orleans should sort of deny that it was the place where jazz started, and they had just shut down the red light district relatively recently in the city, and there was a lot of jazz happening there. So the episode actually talks about this, that jazz was, believe it or not, struggling at the time in New Orleans, and this this random letter supposedly from the axe murderer helped to bring the genre back to the city.
This is why I love that TIL subreddit. This I learned, or today I learned, because there's
today I learned,
always great stuff in there. I make sure that's one of my subscribed subreddits. I love it.
It's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ben. Great to have you. Of course, Devendra Hardwar, he's a senior editor at Engadget. And the Slash Film podcast he does with Jeff Cannata is a must listen if you love movies. What else you want to plug? Anything else?
Oh, that's pretty much it. But yeah, check out the Slash Film podcast. We're going to be reviewing the next Jurassic World, which is better than the last Jurassic World.
You've seen it already?
Yeah, I saw it actually in Taiwan. It was released a couple weeks earlier. Saw it with a whole bunch of school kids. It's still pretty dumb, but this guy is a much better director than the last director.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is Chris Pratt. I love him.
They don't know what to do with that character. Like, he's just literally just handsome action guy.
Yeah.
He's like an action figure.
He was so good in Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he got he got one of them solo gym things. And and suddenly he's like an action figure.
Yeah.
But they don't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
It seems like
that first one, bad director, bad script. This one, bad script, but better director. So, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on, as always. Great to have all three of you. This was fun.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Please good times. Back.
Yeah. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon. It's kind of our last show of the weekend, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. We had a great studio audience from GNTV. Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it. You've now learned what not to do in future broadcasting efforts.
We're all on Ambien. It's fine.
Yeah, don't eat over the keyboard. Exactly. And don't take Ambien on the air. If you want to join us in studio, we love having a live studio audience. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. That's just so we know you're coming. It's no charge, of course. If you're going to be in the Petaluma, Northern California area sometime, please come by and join us. You can also watch our live stream, twit.tv/live. Watch the sausage being made, the behind the scenes, before we bloop out all the A-words version of the show. That's at twit.tv/live. What? Don't say it! She said it. You know, I can make everybody listening buy something right now. But I don't want to use that power. I don't... Twit.tv/live for the live stream. If you do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. As you can see, it's a big part of the show. We love having you there. If you can't watch live, on demand is really the way to do it. And we have on demand audio and video of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. How's your keyboard working there?
So loud.
So loud. But there's no crumbs on you, man. No crumbs on you.
No, that's good.
You can get on-demand versions also in your favorite podcast app. So make sure you subscribe. That way you will get it the minute it's available every Sunday night for your Monday commute. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.